You're listening to the Common Fan Podcast, a Husker football podcast for the common fan by the common fan.
Welcome back to the Common Fan Podcast. I am TJ Burkle, as always, alongside Matty Owens Sr. and Geoff in Lincoln. Hey, get to the Common Fan website, www.commonfan.co. Subscribe on YouTube, like this episode, sign up for the free newsletter, follow all the social media accounts, and generally keep up with all the fun and frivolity of the Common Fans. We have a very special guest today. We're very excited to introduce him in just a minute. I just wanted to point out, we're recording this episode on Sunday. It will be out at 6 a.m. Central Time on Monday morning. At that time, you will still have about 3 hours. I don't know how many hours. You'll still have a little bit of time. You'll still have a little bit of time to vote. Michael Sevier, longtime sports radio host in Omaha, in case you've been living under a rock, has been doing a bracket-style competition of local podcasts. The Common Fans, your Common Fans, are in the Elite Eight. We've already taken down one number one seed. We're facing off against Nick Baugh, another number one seed. We need to vote. He's a two seed? Whatever, two seed.
Still a big deal. He's a big deal.
He's a big deal. Nick Baugh is a big deal. And so get to Twitter. If you don't have a Twitter account, set up a Twitter account. It's very easy. Find Michael Sevier's Twitter page and vote for the Common Fans. When this episode, it's a 24-hour voting period. When this episode is released, you'll still have about 3 or 4 hours to vote. Yep. Vote for the Common Fans. Cluster, I'm sorry to delay your introduction for that shameless plug. But I had, and Michael called us the People's Podcast. That warmed my heart. We are the People's Podcast. You vote for the People's Podcast, baby. our guest today is an all Big Eight Nebraska Cornhusker. He is the owner of 2 national championship rings. He's one of our favorite players of all time. And if, we don't name our episodes, but if we named this episode, we would call it Bring Back the Wing Back. Cluster Johnson joining the Common Fans. First time on the program. Cluster, how are you, sir?
I'm doing quite well. I do need to make a correction. I was honorable mention, all Big Eight. I never made all Big Eight or sec team or anything like that. So we don't want to get that confused.
That's a distinction without a difference. In our minds, you're number one in our hearts. And you're all Big Eight in our minds.
Yeah. All right. Any other offense you played in class, you would have been first team all Big Eight. You would have had way more stats, caught way more touchdowns.
Yeah, I believe that. I believe that truly. I believe that.
Appreciate the integrity and the humility and the honesty. But we're the Common Fans. We're not bound by any sort of journalistic principles. We don't have to be honest.
We don't have any integrity. None of that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Plus, what are you up to these days? Are you still living in Nebraska?
Yes, I live in the Omaha area. I don't want none of them crazy fans showing up to my place. I live a very peaceful life. I've been in pharmaceuticals for about 26 years. I've been able to rise through the corporate ranks. I do quite a bit of traveling for work. But I have, over the years, spent enough time around where I've been able to be heavily involved with my children. Obviously, that was a very important part, necessary part to life for me, is just really being heavily involved with my kids and some of the surrounding kids, some of their friends. I've been able to have a good amount of influence on them also.
That's awesome. Well, we want to get into, you know, kind of your thoughts on the current Husker program. Also, you know, you had an interesting tweet recently about some recent, you know, last 10 years of Husker football and the Frost era and things like that. We want to get into all that, but I mean, we're all children of the 90s. We were in grade school and junior high as the Huskers were or maybe it was junior high and high school, whatever. It all runs together. But as the 94, 95, and 97 teams were winning national championships, you're certainly a guy we watched and cheered for over many years. So we got to start there. Tell us about your story, because you were a quarterback in high school, highly recruited quarterback. Tell us that story about how you ended up at Nebraska and how you ended up playing wingback.
So in a nutshell, I was never supposed to actually even live in Nebraska. What happened was, born and raised in Memphis, Tennessee, I had an uncle who was in the military, and he had a son who was an only child. So in the summer times, this would be like a summer vacation for me. I would come up from Memphis and hang out in Bellevue. And I had two older brothers. And as they left the home, as we were being raised by my grandmother, as they left the home, it was just me at home with grandmother. And I would come up and visit my mother, my grandmother's obviously daughter and her husband. They were in the military, would come up to Bellevue a couple of summers, hang out. And then that last summer, right before high school, I was going into my freshman year. My cousin was like, "Man, why don't you come up here and play ball with me?" You know, so I was like, "Yeah, you know, I really love it up here. It's a good time." And plus, it was Memphis, Tennessee. I don't know if you guys know a lot about the city of Memphis, but it very volatile. I love this city. Obviously, it's the foundation of who I am. But you can get into things. I would just say that there was opportunity to go the wrong way, whereas here I had a little bit more structure, and ended up talking my grandmother into letting me move to Nebraska. And what do you know? I really believe the foundation of Memphis, how do I say this without being offensive? Just very hardcore. It was just a very hardcore environment. And when I came up here, I was able to interject the toughness that I grew up with in Bellevue, right? So I just had a mentality already before I came up here. And obviously ended up having a lot of success. Well, I don't know if you guys remember, but I was, you know, athlete of the year in 91. You know, I did football, wrestling, and track. And I did sports because I enjoyed it and I love to compete. Just love to compete. Never wanted to be in the house. And obviously football was my favorite sport. I was not even a natural quarterback. My cousin was a running back. That's what a lot of people don't realize. My cousin was a running back and I didn't want to compete against him. So I'm like, you know what? I'll just play quarterback, right? So yeah, let's just play quarterback. So ended up, worked all summer long before my sophomore year to be the starter. And I ended up being the starter as a sophomore at Bellevue West. You know, obviously, naturally, I had some gifts and some strengths and some speed. So it was just a natural. I competed for the job, won it. And, you know, it turned into getting an athletic scholarship to Nebraska. Believe me, it was when it all happened, it was surreal. The word I was looking for, surreal. Yeah. Also, that all this stuff was happening to me, and had a lot of scholarship offers to quite a few of the teams in the Big Eight. I look back on it. The crazy thing is, I had an offer from Indiana.
That looks better now than it did then.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, I wouldn't have told anybody that until today.
Now you're walking around. Now you're walking around. Yeah. You know, Indiana recruited me.
That's right. Yeah. Indiana wanted me.
That's awesome.
So, but back when we were coming out of high school, there was no choice. I don't care what you guys think. There was really no choice to go to another school at right. that time with that that coaching staff. They just wasn't letting good players out of the state. The pressure was on.
Yeah.
And so, we could talk about that too, but I couldn't even think about going to another school back then.
Right. Lester, speaking of coaching staff, like with if you did any research about our pod before you agreed to come on, you've probably seen that we've done some almost series types episodes of different coaching eras. And we did one that was just dedicated to strictly Tom Osborne. And you had the pleasure of getting to play for him. Usually when we have guests on like this, they always have some sort of story or something that kind of jumped out to him about T.O., whether it was during the season or being recruited. Is there anything about Tom Osborne story-wise when you played or on the recruiting trail that you would want to share with us that you felt was pretty cool or remarkable?
Three things that stood out, and I'll try to be quick, run through this, because I know you guys probably have a lot of different questions you want to ask, but three questions. One thing, Coach Osborne always remembers everybody. He just has this uncanny ability to, I don't care if you're on scout team or first team, whatever. He just knows you. When you walk into his presence, he'll just naturally be like, hey, Cluster, how you doing? How the kids? And I saw your son. I mean, it's just like, this dude knows probably thousands of players, and he just knows you. And that's just, I always found that fascinating, that he had the ability to do that. The other thing that he did is, you know, you probably heard about his dry sense of humor. He always had a good, dry sense of humor and could make you laugh without laughing, which makes you laugh in itself. Calling people by their nicknames. And I just remember him calling guys by their nicknames. That was a kind of a funny thing to see this well-revered coach calling a guy Lumpy, you know? We had a friend of mine. There's another friend, Dwayne Wiles, who was on the team, and he used to moonlight on the radio station on the weekends. And his radio name was Gangsta Wayne. And he would come into the stadium and Coach Osborne would be like, hey, gangster, how you doing? So it's funny to just kind of see him say that kind of stuff to people.
That's awesome.
And then last but not least, his prophecies and things that he was able to be wise on that would just make you go, man, that's just fascinating that he could do that. Like he could foresee certain things happening. Obviously, having a ton of experience, you're able to kind of play out different scenarios on what you think is going to happen and what you think is going to work. And not only did he do that for football, but he did that in life. And he probably had one of the most incredible speeches that actually turned my career around at Nebraska. He had a speech, because what you guys don't understand is there is a certain pressure on me being a Nebraska kid, being athlete of the year, being in the paper. You go down to Nebraska, and if you don't play right away, people are just going, oh, are you, I mean, is he a bust or was he really not that good? And as a competitor, it's just like it eats you alive that things are not working out for you like you thought. You know, I'm thinking I'm going down there to be the quarterback for the Huskers. And then I moved to DB during the springtime, and I felt that just naturally wasn't a good fit for me. And Coach Brown said, as they were discussing me in a meeting, like, what are we going to do with Cluster? You know, he stood up and said, hey, let me bring him on as a wingback. I think he would fit what we're trying to do. And actually, Coach Brown and I was just kind of talking about that. But how he turned it around for me was, what people don't realize, as a young guy leaving home after 18 years, you go down to Nebraska and there's parties, there's girls, there's all these alpha dogs around you. There's shit talking. Can I curse? I'm sorry.
That's fine. Oh, you're good. Yeah.
You know, there's people talking shit to each other. Sometimes that can play with your mentality, right? You got to try to balance school. You got to try to balance going to practice, weightlifting, study hall. Like, you got to balance all that. And some guys are very good at it, but there's quite a few of us that are not. We're like wild dogs released in the neighborhood. We're stray dogs running around the neighborhood. So that was me. You know, I was a stray dog running around Lincoln, like, ooh, I can get into this. Ooh, I can get into that. And then all of a sudden you look up and your grades are bad. You're fifth on the depth chart. You're just lost. And he had a speech in front of the whole team. And I just felt like he was talking directly to me. I'm like, this guy is talking to me. You know, because he had mentioned, he said, if you're not where you think you should be, if you're not first or second on the depth chart and you think you should be, if you got bad grades, if you're not doing everything you can to be the player you can be, you need to reevaluate what you got, who you have in your circle. He's like, we have 100 and something players on our team. He's quoted the number and he said, hey, not everybody here is to play football. Everyone on this team are not here to play football and be the best player they could be. I remember him saying that. I was like, wow. He's like calling guys out without calling them out directly. And he said, some guys are here because they were pressured to be here. You know, they're from a small town or whatever, and they just wanted to be a Husker. But are they really doing the things they need to do to be the best that they could possibly be? And when he said that, I don't know if you guys remember, like, watching cartoons when you see these bubbles pop up and you see all these different things inside the bubbles. That was me. Like, I saw guys I was hanging out with, girls I was hanging out with, just different things that I was doing that was preventing me from being the best that I could. And when I turned that around, first thing I turned around was school, because I was doing crappy in school. I turned that around. And then I just stopped hanging out with certain people. And that next spring, I remember the coaches going, Cluster, what happened to you? I just remember them saying, yo, you are a different person. Like, you're a totally different person. So they don't realize is I took what Coach Osborne said and I just applied it across everything that I had going on.
That's awesome, man. Yeah.
Well, Cluster, you have you've got some kind of famous plays in my mind in Husker history. I certainly have one that sticks out. Do you have any favorite games or plays or any stories about teammates during those awesome years in the 90s?
Oh, man. It's so many. I can't even begin to tell you. So people probably remember me most from the Colorado play.
That's what I always think of, yeah.
You know, the hostile environment. And the thing that I remember most about our team is we were very comfortable on the road. It was just something about on the road. We wanted to go in and shut the crowd up and just dominate them, right? And just walk away going, you know, we're going to win. It's just by how much we're going to win. And we didn't mind being in a tough game because we knew we put in the work and we knew what the outcome was going to be. We knew we were going to wear them down. We knew that we were more physical. We knew that we were just more talented and we were going to outwork you. And we did it every single time. Every single time it always worked. And so I would say that Colorado play is a big play for me. But I don't know if you guys remember in 94, when Colorado came to Lincoln, it was 2-3. They had Cordell Stewart. They had a really good team. You know, Cordell Stewart, Rashawn Salon won Heisman. And
Westbrook.
You know, they had just won that Hail Mary play up in Michigan.
Yeah,
they were the team of destiny, right? And they came to Lincoln and we just spanked them. But
24-7.
That's right. That's right. Well, the coaches, if you guys go back and look at that game, the coaches put in some plays for me in particular to nail the nose guard. It was called a wham play. Okay. So if you guys go back and look at that game, I lined up like right outside the tight end and I went in motion and I crashed right into the nose guard. Man, it was the most fun thing to do because he didn't see me coming. He wouldn't see me coming. So I would nail him, and then Lawrence Phillips would just come right behind me and pick up like 7-8 yards. But it was really one of those plays to like send a message to say, we're here to take your head off. We're here to be physical. We're here to dominate you. And they used to use me for that kind of stuff, which I loved.
I was just going to say, that's got to make you feel good that, you know, you're a guy that catches passes, maybe runs a reverse or something like that. But then your coaches are confident enough in you to say, hey, Kles, we're going to have you like go in motion and hit the nose guard.
Just like punch somebody in the mouth.
There's not that many guys in any era of college football that are able to do that, first of all. But then to have your coaches like ask you to do that, that's got to be pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, again, that was just a part of who we were as receivers at the time, because like you said, we didn't get as many passes. So Coach Brown and Coach Osborne were always trying to find creative ways to make us have an outcome or a part of the game that's important. And, blocking on the perimeter, blocking downfield, being very physical was a big deal, because when it was time to run a pass, a lot of times I felt we were a step or two faster. You know, if you're wearing guys' leg out. So they took out the cut block, right? So we used to always cut block all the time. And if you're worried about that all the time, sometimes you forget about us running pass plays. And we used to, one of the things Brent and I talked about was, you guys go back and look at those times, we used to throw for quite a few touchdowns. I mean, we didn't throw the ball a lot, but we had years where we would have 24 touchdowns, 43 touchdowns, 18 touchdowns. Did a lot of play action, obviously. And then on top of it, just wearing guys out. And they couldn't cover us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love that. You're so right, Matty-O. Like, how many times is a wide receiver being asked to take the nose guard's head off? I love that.
Long for those days.
Yeah, yeah. Cluster's right, though. That's just that era of Husker football. Like, those that's guys exactly would right. do anything it took to win. And
yeah.
Well, let me add something to that, though. So it was a little tougher for me to make the transition from quarterback to being a physical receiver. So you guys got to understand, I had a quarterback's mentality, which is a little bit more finesse. I came out of a pro-style offense in high school, so it was a little bit more finessey. When you get to Nebraska, not only the quarterbacks are physical. I mean, look how Tommy Frazier ran. You know, look how Scott Frost ran. Look how even Brooke Behringer. I mean, those guys, they ran hard, and they delivered blows to guys. It's very rare that they took a blow. But for me, what happened was, another thing that really kind of turned my career around at Nebraska was, back in 92, we played Kansas State in Japan. I don't know if you guys remember that.
Yep.
So I had just transitioned from DB to wingback. And heading to Japan, they took the top four positions. So I'm like, yeah, you know, going to Japan. And as I'm looking at the list of attendees to go to Japan, my name wasn't on there. And I'm like, what? They took two walk-ons over me.
Oof.
Two walk-ons.
No.
David Sizes was one, and Brett Hobowell, right? Some names from the past, right? Yeah. Some of my wingback brothers from the past. They took those two guys because Coach Brown felt like I wasn't ready. You don't know the plays very well. You don't run hard. You're not as physical as I need you to be. So that was the first thing. And then the second thing was, we are, a lot of times we do one-on-ones or two-on-two in practice. And some guys understand, hey, listen, I got to make an impression. In my mind, I'm going, oh, my friends are on defense. I can't hit them like that. For some reason, I was just thinking that way. Well, when you're thinking that way and your friend ain't thinking that way, then he gonna make you look bad. So that happened to me during one spring scrimmage. The receivers, if you're on a perimeter out wide, and they run the option your way, you would have to double read. So a double read is if the corner is attacking, you block him. But if the safety is plugging fast, you come off and you hit him. Well, it was like a cover nine. The corner was bailing out and the safety was coming. And I saw him coming out of the corner of my eye. I'm going, oh, yeah. I'm going to give him a little something and you know, keep him off the play. Well, it was my friend, like Troy Dumas. I don't know if you guys remember Troy Dumas.
Oh, yeah.
We came in together as freshmen. I'm like, I can't, like, knock him out. So I just kind of gave him a little nudge. Troy swam me, went in there, boom, made the play in the backfield, right? And the next day, Coach Brown ran that play back 15 times. He was like, who is this guy up there? Who is that? And I'm like, you know it's me, you bastard.
Oh,
he just kept running the playback. See, this is what we can't have, guys. I can't play a guy who does this. I mean, how can I trust you if you're doing this in practice? It was like the spotlight was on me and everybody was just looking at me like, you know? So from that day forward, on my mama, TJ, Maddie, and Jeff, on my mama, what I did, so I went over to the defense before practice and I told them, I said, I want to let you guys know it's not personal what I'm about to do.
That's intense. I love that.
Not personal, it's business. And from that point forward, I released hell.
That's awesome.
I love released it. Hell on defense.
That's awesome.
Love it.
Yes.
Love that, Lester.
I say the same thing to these guys when I mercilessly berate them on the podcast.
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
it's
sure.
Not personal,
thank,
guys.
Thank you, Jeff.
It's
thank
just
you.
Business.
That's right. It's just business.
Well, let's shift gears a little bit, Clester. And we're in the midst of spring ball. I want to get to this year's team and the current era of Nebraska football. But we just can't shake the recent past. former athletic director Bill Moose is out with a book that has generated a lot of conversation. I presume this is where this came from. I've got to ask you about a tweet. George Reitzer, who's a podcaster on college football and other things, a few weeks ago had a tweet, and I think he was commenting on it. The Oregon Ducks dodged a bullet with Scott Frost. It was a $40 million disaster at Nebraska. And he went on and said a little bit more. You, Clester, commented on that. I'm not trying to get you in trouble. Don't say anything you don't want to say. But you commented on that. This story needs to be studied further in Nebraska. No one has been held accountable or called out for this hire and the players who assisted with it. We know who they are. And we know as players who defended the BS. This put the program even further behind than it already was. There seems to be, we did a series, like Jeff said, two summers ago, looking at all the coaching hires post Osborne. So obviously that included Frost. The Frost episode is our most viewed and most downloaded episode ever of any episode we've ever done. There seems to be an unending appetite for people can't let this go. I'd love to ask you to expand on what you meant by this tweet.
Absolutely. Like I told you, fellas, I at the age of 53, the raw age of 53, I have my brothers in Husker football that I'm super tight with, and I've earned the right to say whatever I need to say and whatever I want to say.
Yeah. Let's go.
we are grown men. We can tell the truth. Now, by no means are we perfect. Like, no, nobody's perfect, right? We realize that we make mistakes, but we also can own up to our mistakes and we can discuss where things went wrong and we can say that maybe we were complicit in with the outcome of things, how it happened, right? So that being said, you know, some of the things that I learned about Scott, I felt the same way about Scott that I think the majority of us who used to play, like, I was excited, right? I was actually excited for Scott to come back.
Yeah.
After looking at the pedigree of who he was, right?
The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.
All medications require eligibility and prescription. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month med plus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.
Obviously, a national champion quarterback at Nebraska, after coming back from Stanford, which I could care less. You know, coming out of high school, if that's where you want to go, if you feel like that's the best opportunity for you, go. Like, I think that was overblown. I think that was more of a fan thing versus a player thing. I don't know if there's very many players that's going, well, he went to Nebraska, he didn't come here first, right? I don't recall having that discussion with anybody. Not to say that it didn't happen. I was too worried about trying to play and dominate for Nebraska. I could care less about some guy going to Stanford and now he's transferring back. It made sense why he wanted to come back. Like, we were kicking butt. And he's from Nebraska, right? So, yeah, come on back and enjoy this winning, right? So, that being said, Scott played pro ball, national championship quarterback, like I said. You know, spent some time in Oregon. I want to say he spent some time in northern Iowa.
Yep.
K-State, you know, wasn't he on K-State staff for a minute or two?
I mean, I'm just saying he did the work, is what I'm saying. Yeah. Is he did the work. And then he goes to UCSF and kills it, right?
Yeah.
Does a good job. So the fact that he's coming back here, I'm going, yeah, you know, like, he bestows some of that goodness on this program now.
Yeah. Right? Give us some of that.
And what I'm learning is maybe he wasn't ready to come back here or didn't want to come back here for fear of what happened, right? What happened, it happened, right? If you are an alumnus of Nebraska and you don't succeed, and the worst possible thing that could possibly happen, then it's hard to come home. Like, now you can't come home. Like, do people see Scott Frost as the national championship quarterback now for Nebraska? No, that ain't the first thing that people think about now. They think about his failures as a head coach. So that's why it's really tough to be put in that position. But there are some things that I learned about Scott and his personality that maybe hurt him or prevented him from succeeding. When you have some serious insecurities about if people like you or if you can trust certain people, if you can trust anybody due to what happened in the past, that can prevent you from being all you can be, right? All the rumors about what he was doing and his personal life, I could care two shits about, to be honest with you guys. I did not care. Of course, I heard these things, but I would always tell people, I'm like, I don't care what he's doing in his personal life. Just win. Like,
exactly.
If you're winning, a lot of that stuff gets quiet, right?
Yeah.
But when you're losing, everybody's nitpicking at everything. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened with him, right? But whenever somebody would bring up, oh, I think I saw Scott here doing this or doing that, and I would be like, man, I don't want to hear that. Like, I don't really care, to be honest with you. I don't care. I look in the mirror every day, right? I get up, I look at myself in the mirror. Would I want to go into the scrutiny of somebody following me around every trying to chronicle everything that I do? No, I wouldn't want that. So again, for him, it was about he got hired for a lot of money to do a big job, and that was to bring back Nebraska. And when that isn't happening, then of course you're gonna come under scrutiny. Now there were about five former Huskers that I was very disappointed in, because when you would have discussions with them, they would, since they were friends with him, it was like, you're just covering for your friend, right? You're just giving excuses for your friend. And that bothers me. That bugs me. It's like, this is not bigger than the program, right? Your friendship is not bigger than the program. It should be about holding your friend accountable and doing his job. That's what it should be about. It shouldn't be about, well, he's my friend, so I can't say nothing bad. You know, one of the obvious people was obviously like Matt Davison, right? I think Matt Davison was under a few regimes down there. He was the voice of the Huskers, you know, doing some commentating and stuff. And sometimes guys, I see it, and I try my best to never fall into this. It's become like too big for who I am as a person. Like, I really try to be down to earth, humble, loving, and cool with all of my Husker brothers, regardless of what position I have within the program, right? And I think sometimes these guys, they get in the program and they get some sort of position, and they think that they have to be these gatekeepers versus keeping it real, right? Just, you can keep it real with your guys, right? You don't have to act like, well, now that Coach Pelini is here and Coach Beck is here and these are my buddies, it's almost like these guys, they lose who they are and how they got to where they were. They just kind of lose it. And it's just hard to have respect for those type of people. It's hard to have respect for a person who can see things that are going sideways and won't acknowledge it, won't talk about it, and would just stay there. Well, hey, I'm getting paid. You know, I'm close with him. Like, I get tickets. I can do this. I can do that. Yeah. Won't say nothing. So that's what bothers me. But Jack Stark, who was our team psychologist during the time where we play Husker football, he was a guy that we can go to. We're having problems or issues. When he saw stuff going bad, he saw stuff going south, he says, you know what? I'm out. Right. I can see where this thing is going. I can't be a part of it. Right. And I just feel like some guys needed to have some of that in them, but I don't know. That's just me.
No, that's interesting. So if I'm characterizing your position right, it's basically Frost had a lot of success. He earned it as a coach. Mm-hmm. You and a lot of other players were excited when he got hired, but as it unfolded and wasn't going well, nothing should take precedence over the standard. Nothing should Absolutely. Take precedence over the program, right? Absolutely. And getting back to, because I think a lot of fans still believe our rightful place is one of the best college football programs in the country, being competitive, being in the national conversation, being in the top 25, all those things. And you felt like maybe it was became a cult of you personality know, or a devotion to a personality over the program. Almost.
You know, you had Jason Peter there, you had Jay Foreman there, you know, you had guys within the program, you know, trying to be consultants. It's like, yo, what's going on here, right? Mm-hmm. But again, if you get a position, you know, you start gatekeeping. I'm important, right? I'm important to the program because here I'm doing this and I'm doing that. And it's like, come on, man, just be honest, right?
Yeah.
Shit is going bad and it's okay to say it. Things are going bad. This is not what we thought was going to happen. You could probably see certain things going on and you just won't call it out, right? Because you're given a spot. But when it all hits the fan, now people are looking at you like, yo, you were there. What happened? Like, I just want to know what happened. Like, because you're in the inside, right? You're in there. Like, what do you see happen? So that's what bothers me. It's like, that guy's there, that guy's there, that guy's there, that guy's there. Like, you play on championship teams. Like, what happened? Like, yeah. Like, talk to the fans. Tell, hey, listen, I'm going to tell you what happened. Like, I know why guys won't do it, but when you don't do it, then you look bad. That's all I'm saying.
I really appreciate you saying that. I think this is an ongoing theme among the fan base. And it's why we did our series a year and a half ago. We looked at every coach post Osborne and kind of the hires and the misfires and all those things. But like, and we see it with athletic directors coming and going. And Moose's book, we've talked since Moose's book came out. It's so dysfunctional still in the administrative apparatus.
Yeah.
And I think there's a feeling among fans that like people know the story. Some people know the story, but we invest so much time and money as fans and we're so devoted and we want this thing to get humming again. But then it feels like Sipple came out again. I hate to keep throwing Sipple under the bus. Sipple came out and says,
he can handle it.
He says Frost called him about canceling the Oklahoma game and asked Sipple to cover for him on that. And Sipple, I think to his credit, said no and said he thought it was a bad idea. But at the same time, I think fans hear that and they say, why are we hearing this 5 years after it happened?
Correct.
Yeah.
Right. Like why are you as a reporter? And again, I get it. I'm trying to be objective. I'm trying to give the benefit of the doubt. As a reporter, you cultivate, you have to have sources and you want these guys to keep calling you and you can't share everything they tell you. Like that's how reporters do this. If you want to keep sources, I get it.
True.
But fans feel like, why is that story coming out 5 years after the fact? That Frost is trying, that's a terrible look that he tried to get out of that game in 2021. That's a terrible look. It's inexcusable. And I think fans just continue to feel like we want to be in on the joke. We want to be part of this. We've always been part of it, right?
Yeah.
I've made this point before. It's the players thing and the coaches thing, but it's the fans thing. As like we're here and we're going to be here for the next coach and the next AD and the next coach and the next AD after that. We'll always be here.
Yeah.
And it continues to feel like there's this cabal of people in the know and we find out 5 years after the fact.
Yeah. I'm going to come back to that because that was very interesting, very well put. Loved what you said there. Like, I want to bring up Steve Peterson, right? You guys remember Steve Peterson?
Oh, yeah.
We know Steve.
We do.
Like, wouldn't you want to interview Steve Peterson and ask him a bunch of different questions? Like, what were you thinking here? Like, how did things go left here? Why did you and Coach Osborne have a riff? You know, like, those kind of things are just intriguing to me that I feel like me with who I am as a person and how I felt about the program, the integrity that I would like to have with fans and with people. I would just, you know, one of the things that Coach Brown, I just had a good conversation with Coach Brown, and by no means do I want to talk about anything personal that we said, but the main thing from that conversation was this. As a guy my age now of 53, you don't get to where I am having thin skin, right? You can't have thin skin. I think people will respect the fact if you can just be honest. Like they'll respect. They may be upset, but they can respect the fact that you came out that you could come to me and you could say certain things. Hey, Lester, hey, this is what I was thinking at the time. This is why this happened. And, you know, I was stuck between a rock and a hard place on trying to, you know, be kumbaya here and kumbaya here, you know, like after saying, hearing that kind of stuff, it's like, okay. Cause then I can look at you and go, okay, it's not just about me and my feelings. You're also dealing with stuff too. I get it. Now that I know that, I'm definitely more understanding about what you went through. Right. And that's the thing. I think that some of those guys could be like, I think there's a way you could deliver the message without throwing people under the bus. And maybe not, but I don't know. I think you can.
I assume most players, you know, have sort of a devotion to the team for forevermore after you've done playing, after your playing days are over. How hard has it been to watch kind of the slow, this is not just Frost, and it's been a lot of coach, it's been a lot of misfires, it's been bad leadership in the administration, it's bad coaching. How hard has that been to watch post-Osborne? Let's give Solich some credit, maybe post-Solich. Again, like we did this whole series, some good with Solich, some good with Pelini, like you could pull some good out of every stint. But ultimately, you know, we're now like trying to claw our way back even to being a top 25 program. How hard has that been to watch since you left?
It makes you appreciate Coach Riley.
Oh, wow. All right.
Wow, I didn't expect that.
Curveball.
You know, it makes you appreciate Bill Callahan.
You like that, TJ? Bill Callahan. You see that?
I hate Bill Callahan.
I was actually, the funny thing is, I was just looking at their time period when they were here. Like, they had some 9-win seasons and some 8-win seasons.
Yeah, right.
Great.
They did.
Riley, you can't argue with the numbers.
I'm just
going, man, we really need to appreciate anybody who gets us back to respectability. Like, I don't think we will ever take that for granted again, because as a player, I never, ever in a million years thought that we would be where we are now. And for this long, I never thought that. And a lot of programs have been through those situations. You know, I remember, Alabama, Miami, you know, they've all had these moments. The only team that I can't, that really hasn't experienced any real downtime is Ohio State. Even Michigan's been down some, but Ohio State has pretty much been stable, even since when I was playing, right? They've still been pretty good over the years. But I did not see us going through this long of a period, not being relevant, not being in contention, not even being in contention for conference championships, right? We haven't really, to be honest with you, haven't been a real serious, like we're picked to win. Like, we've gotten there. I think we've gotten there under Pelini a few times, but got crushed. And except that one time against Texas, we should have won that. We should have won that big with Adamican Sue. I was at that game. We should have won that game. We got robbed.
For sure.
Everyone knows this.
Yeah, we should have been Big 12 champions at that time. But for the most part, it's just been so far in between being relevant and being a respectable program. We've had, you know, the Pelini era, 9 or 10 wins, lost 4 games every year. But I don't know. I think we'd even take that again at this point.
Sure. So 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the Common Fan podcast, we're common fans. We have common conversations. Let's have the most generic common fan conversation when you sit with your boys across the table, whether you're having coffee or drinking beers. Everybody wants to know their opinion on what do you think about Matt Rhule? What do you think about the state of the program right now? So, Cluster, I'm going to ask you that. How are we doing? Do we suck? Are we good? Are we heading in the right direction? Are we heading backwards? How do you feel about Matt Rhule and the current team?
I think it's still early. I like the fact that, so let me give you the positives. Let me give you the positives first, right?
Give us the good news first, Class.
We've we hadn't gone to a bowl for what, 8 years prior to that, to a couple years ago. So I like the fact that at least we are now going to a bowl, right? I feel like there are times where I will say, all right, I can identify with who we are. Like, I remember when Colorado came here, it's a couple of years ago, and we just crushed them at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was a year we had a celebration. That was Matt Rule's first year.
It was 2024, second year.
Yeah.
Second year.
Yeah. Yeah, we really smashed them. Like, and I'm like, man, if Nebraska plays like this, I'm not saying we will win every game, but we could be in every game. And that it was particularly that first half. I know the first half, we really played as the best Husker football I've seen us play in a long time.
100%.
I feel that Matt Rule, or what I see with Matt Rule, is he tries to be transparent and he tries to be honest. But after a while, it just starts to sound like almost used car salesman-like. It starts to feel that way, right? It starts to, and I hate to put that on him because, again, it's still early. He's going into year three now, right? If I'm not mistaken.
Year four.
Okay. Year four now. Damn, that's right. God, it's going so fast. This is a critical year. And what I mean by that is he went from not very good, had to kind of put his stamp on things. We go to 7-6. Everybody thought that third year, that's usually the Matt Rule year where things kind of gets right, and it didn't quite go that way. I mean, it started off good, but then it just kind of fell off. This is a critical year in that if he doesn't win, I would say at least 9 games, which is going to be tough with the schedule this year, you will start to have the fans get disenchanted again. Will start to say, man, we're back in the same thing again. This is not it. And I know this is something that y'all don't want to hear. I think we only have, to be honest with you, I think we have 3 ways to get back.
Right.
There's 3 ways to get back to Nebraska respectability. 3 ways. You guys want to know?
Let's hear it.
Nervous.
Yeah. It's sad that I'm gonna say this, but
are you gonna go back to the option?
No. All right.
Damn it. I was hoping that
I'm gonna say this because I think that it would work, to be honest with you. You pull Nick Saban out for 3 to 4 years, Pam, make him the highest paid coach for 3-4 years, get him turned around.
It's one.
Mm-hmm.
And then let him choose a successor. Say, hey, you even get to choose a successor to continue what you did. I know people don't want to hear this. Urban Meyer, he's another one who has.
I told you guys.
Real success. He has real success. Bring him in there. He knows how to recruit. He knows how to hold people accountable. He probably has a good staff. Again, 3 or 4 years. Let him choose his successor. Then the last one is, go get Kirk Cignetti.
I knew you were going to say it.
So the moral of the story is, believe that we need someone who has had success, knows how to recruit.
Proven.
Proven. Now, that's one way, obviously, that's one way. The other way is, you just got to do your research. I mean, Indiana did their research. They had a guy who was just right there. He already had the blueprint. They just had to believe in him, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
There are other coaches out there like that, that they've built programs and they've done really well. They just haven't had their opportunity to do it on a bigger scale. I think there are guys out there. And one of them, my son Keegan, just played for at New Mexico. Coach Jason Eck. He was at South Dakota State, OC, went to Idaho. Idaho was a crap program. He won 10 games there 3 years. Took him to the playoff. They never had no success. Took him to the playoffs. They won in the playoffs. You know, they didn't win at all, but they were winning. He got hired away to New Mexico. New Mexico has been, like, crappy. And his first year in New Mexico, he'd go 9-4 at New Mexico and beat some really good teams.
Yeah.
You know, they smashed UCLA this year, 35-10.
Mm-hmm.
New Mexico did. And so I got to see him up close, and I was just mesmerized by him. I'm saying, man, he has that it factor. He has it. He just hasn't gotten a shot yet to do it on a bigger scale. And he played at Wisconsin. He was a lineman at Wisconsin. That's where he played his college football. And a lot of people think that in a few years that Wisconsin is going to try to get him. Because I'm going to tell you, wherever he goes, he's going to have success because he has a good staff and he has a great connection to the players, and they got a great offense, a great defense. His son was the player of the year in the Mountain West on defense. He was a defensive player of the year. So, this year's critical, and I want Coach Rhule to be successful.
I was gonna say, I presume what this is after Coach Rhule has been successful. Right?
I want Coach Rhule to be successful because it's like, hell, you're starting over again, right?
Nobody wants that.
Yeah.
And we don't want that. We want him to win. I want him to win at least 8-9 games this year, at least 8 or 9 games. Because then that kind of gives you hope.
We're coming up on time. I want to be respectful of your time, but that's a good point. We've talked about this before. I certainly don't think, like, even though this is a much tougher schedule than anything Rhule has faced to this point, I don't think 6-6 will cut it. I kind of don't think 7. I think 7-5, not going to get him fired, but I think
more of the same is kind of the feeling.
It's going to be more of the same and people kind of shrugging their shoulders or whatever. Even with the schedule, I think minimum 8 wins for people to feel like because it's people don't want to stand pat. If we were 10-2, people would be okay with standing pat. People want to take that next step forward.
Yeah.
I think people aren't going to feel like we've done that unless we get to at least 8.
Yeah, I think he's got to get to 8. Yeah. But isn't just baffling? Like we've talked about this so much over the since Osborne, right? All these other blue blood programs, and I'm still throwing us in there just by legacy.
We're blue blood. Let's go.
Like. They go through these rough patches, but then sometimes they'll just fluke into a really good season. And then maybe they don't have that good of a coach. And then a year later, he's gone. I think about Jim McElwain at Florida, he had a couple of good seasons and then just flames out. We haven't really even had that much of that for the last 20 years. Throw that out. It's just baffling to me that we haven't lucked into a 10-win season.
All right. For the last something.
11 or 12 years, it just hasn't happened.
Yeah.
I don't know. Right. I just had to get that out.
There's a lot of different reasons. Obviously, I do believe that Coach Rhule has gotten reconnected with Nebraska kids and coaches. I think he's tried to do a good job with that. I was shocked that Scott Frost didn't do that. He wasn't well connected at all with the Metro and just across the state. He was just very much, standoffish. And I was told by that, even with coaches that coached down there, that he was very standoffish, didn't return messages very often, even with players that he played with. I knew some of my friends that played with Scott, because contrary to what you guys understand, is I wasn't that close with Scott at all. I mean, I really didn't know him. We were there 1 year together. I was on first team offense going against scout team defense. He was on scout team offense going against first team defense. And I didn't care about what some transfer was doing. I didn't. I already, at that time, I had been there for 5 years. I had my group of friends. I had people that I hung out with, and he just wasn't one of them. He was just not someone that I really talked to. Not to say I didn't respect him, but I just didn't have that sort of brotherhood connection with him. So when he was recruiting my son, Keegan, I just didn't feel I didn't feel that sort of connection with Scott Frost.
Mm. That's totally fair.
Yeah. We got to get back to that too, but you brought it up, Cluster.
We're going to have to do a part two.
There's
a lot of stuff we haven't covered.
Hey, we'd love to have you back on anytime. Anytime. Absolutely. One thing we talked about it before we hit record. Probably the most important thing, minor connection here. Cluster, you coach as a young man, you coach Matty Owens Sr. in YMCA Spirit basketball. Didn't seem to have much of a recollection of it. Matt remembers you coaching him. You didn't remember him as a player. I don't know what that says about Matty O's talent on the hardwood.
Well, you know what? There wasn't much of it, TJ, but I worked hard. I could hit a three once in a while. Cluster did let me name an inbounds play. I named it after late comedian Red Fox. So we had an inbounds play, Red Fox. That's like the only thing I really remember about.
Cluster, is that ringing any bells or still nothing?
Still nothing. It doesn't. But that's not on Matt. That's more on me. That's me getting old. Not being able to remember.
Hey, he's 53 now. Give him a break.
That's right.
All right. Well, Cluster, we're going to give you the rest of your day back. But will you come on with the Common Fans again? Maybe sometime before.
Absolutely. There's. I could think of a ton of other things that we didn't cover, but that's okay. I think you guys would be very intrigued about some of the other things that happened during the years. So,
Now we have to do part two. We're kind of self-appointed. Like we like doing some deep dives into various parts of Husker history. So we would love to go through some of that with you.
We'll run it back.
For sure. Let's do it.
All right. Well, officially now friend of the program, Cluster Johnson, Husker legend, all Big Eight wingback. All right. All conference. All conference wingback. Cluster, thanks for joining us.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Big Red basketball today. Go Big Red basketball.
That's right.
Beat Iowa. Once this episode is out, we'll know whether or not we beat Iowa, but we were recording before that game, so hopefully they can get it done.
There you go.
Hey, Common fans, be kind to each other. We'll be back at you soon. In the meantime, as always, GBR for life.
Holy moly! Man, woman, and child did that. Put them in the aisles. Bring that trophy back to Lincoln.